our new reality.
Sure. Yep.
This has been Mayor Bill Keeler of Cohoes. We've been.
My name is Eric from Catskill, and you're listening to WGXC Acre 90.7 FM.
The Radio Witch Moon Hotline is standing by to collect good vibes of all kinds. Call 518-302-6067 and tell the moon your happy secrets, gratitudes, wins, poems, favorite recipes, compliments, and anything else that cheers you up. That's 518-302-6067. The Radio Witch is getting her candles, herbs, and crystal radio set ready to transform your vibes into a powerful spell to amplify all the good vibes into a healing balm. Call now with your good news, silver linings, songs, and bluebird sightings. 518-302-6067. Tune in on the full moon right here at WGXC 90.7 FM Acre to receive the full power of the spell. And don't forget to call 518-302-6067.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Marcus DeGrazia Acupuncture of Austerlitz, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
90.7 FM.
Acre, Hudson, Catskill.
Good evening. You are listening to Tech Talk with Ralph and Bill, or Bill and Ralph, depending on how you want to say it. We are live on WGXC Radio 90.7 FM. Mr. Benko, are you on, and can you give the call numbers?
I'm on. And you gave the call letters, so I guess that means that I can give the call numbers. WGXC 518-697-7400 and 518-622-2598. Call, I hope, toll free. Ask us your Tech Talk question, and while you're on the Wave Farm WGXC website, remember to become a sustaining member. Hello, world.
Hello, world. And I have an update on.
The vandalism of the Arecibo dish radio antenna in Puerto Rico?
No, that was sad.
That was sad.
It came crashing down. Here we go. This is a TikTok update.
Oh, a TikTok update. TikTok.
On TikTok. TikTok update. There we go. That's better. All right, so the White House has quietly allowed Friday's TikTok deadline to lapse without taking any action against the app. A U.S. ban on the app was supposed to be in effect on September 28th, but it was twice extended before crickets. Trump made up. It's saying that Trump thought it was a U.S. security interest. Of course, they were worried about our. And again, I say this with the state face. They were worried about our privacy. The deadline was first extended. It was later extended till December 4th. And of course, today is the 7th, and there is no action. Nothing has happened.
Bill, this is a date that will live in infamy.
It says the government will continue to work on a deal that would put a larger slice of TikTok's ownership in American hands, the person said, and doing nothing will allow talks over a possible deal to continue. I think at this point, all of the fuss and smoke and screaming and hollering about TikTok.
Yeah.
What does it matter if the Chinese have your data, or if the CIA, or if you know, Google. They're all part of the same conglomerate, aren't they?
No, not really.
They're all answered to the same supreme underlord.
Yes, the Upadarian consortium.
No. I said underlord, not overlord.
Oh, yes.
Get your overlord and underlord right.
Are we talking about the Freemasons here? Because I happen to be a 32nd degree Mason.
I deny everything. I didn't do any of the Freemasons until I discovered that they weren't a global conspiracy. It took away from my desire to join.
That's okay.
Otherwise, I would have been right there with the apron in hand.
You assume we would have wanted you.
Oh, touche.
We're very particular.
I was invited.
Oh, really?
I was invited.
Well, find out who invited you so that I can have them punished.
Ah, that is nice. That is not very nice, actually, but...
It's wonderful. So here we are. In addition to that, your president, Donald J. Trump, was in Georgia today, threatening to shut down the United States military, including the Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, and Coast Guard, allowing those perfidious Canadians to finally invade. They've had their eye on us for some time. Unless Section 230 of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, allowing social media to let people like you, Bill, and me, but even people like you, to post stuff on their platforms, platforms like Facebook or Twitter, without the platforms themselves being held legally responsible for what the riffraff, such as, say, you, might post there. So are you in solidarity with your president, with his threat to shut down the military if Congress does not repeal Section 230?
I'm thinking this through, and the Canadians invading, I mean, what could go wrong there? I mean,
they might impose universal health care.
I'm not keen on that because I don't like to wait 6 months to, you know, get a flu checkup. They might do other wacky things like, you know, make everybody be polite or
play hockey,
sort of foliage on our flag, you know, change the flag to some foliage related.
Right, a maple leaf.
Well, probably they wouldn't let us have a maple leaf. They would probably let us have like a pine cone.
A pine cone.
Yeah, I can see them.
It's worrisome. We actually invaded Canada back around
1812
or something like
and
that.
And that didn't work out.
Well, the Canadians opened up a can of whoop tushy on us.
They did. I hope I can say that
without upsetting the FCC. But they did, and our generals were very cocky about our ability to conquer Canada. And the Canadians really opened up a bad can of whoop tushy on us, which I think is smarting to this very day. So where are you? Are you or are you not in solidarity with President Trump about taking away Section 230?
I'm not really one way or another about this. I think that the platforms have PR, in terms of PR and the opacity of their standards, have dug holes, and I think that the overreaction is equally problematic.
Well, you're just saying that because you were put into Facebook jail.
No, that's been like over a year now. So
yes, I know you've paid your debt to society.
I paid my debt to society. No. I mean, I the opacity of the rules is and look, I've written extensively about this, as you know. So I think that repealing Section 230 is going to lead to problems. It's the old scenario where, oh my gosh, we have this invasive species. Let's get this other invasive species to get rid of the other invasive species. And then, oh my goodness, the other invasive species is worse than the first invasive species.
Yeah.
That's sort of what I think. I don't like the invasive species, which I think is the very poor way that most of the platforms handle governance. But I don't think that the solution is going to solve the problem of governance. And I still think the ball is in the court of the platforms. I don't think Trump is going to get his way on this, not by a long shot.
You don't think that they're going to repeal Section 230?
Not by a long shot.
How about by a short shot?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm hearing increasingly Democrats are thinking, for they all have their different reasons, but when a Democrat and a Republican get together on bipartisan support for something, run for the hills.
It's time to grab your grab your ankles because the politicians are conspiring against us voters and taxpayers. Yes.
Oh yeah, they've all got their very noble reasons.
Let me put it in good words, not
GOP or Dem talk. I think we're heading for a very uncertain landscape in the technical future, and I think the disruptions will be good for new innovators.
Okay, like who?
I don't know. We don't know who the new innovators are going to be yet. I don't think any of the ones that are rising now, like Parler et al., are necessarily going to be. I think they all have the wrong model, which I've already talked about, the niche, the vertical model, as opposed to the broad model. Which, you know, for average people simply means vertical is you serve a very niche audience of people and you've got to give them a lot more than just what platforms give, and don't try to create a platform for everybody. Like, create platforms that serve. I mean, literally, I could see platforms for people to do gardening that have like an app that allows you to look at your land and it tells you what your garden looked like in so many months and connects you to a group of people that can help you. You know, immediately they can give you advice like that. You could just tap into the group and whoever's available wants to talk to you. Specific apps and platforms for specific needs.
Yeah, here is the business model problem with that, Bill, and that is Facebook has 2.7 billion. Active users. That is to say, people who come to that didn't just sign up for Facebook, but actually go to Facebook. That allows them to sell a lot of advertising and make a lot of money, which makes them very viable. If you're talking about a niche site, a group of hobbyists, such as, which was the one that you were just talking about, gardening, that might be a few hundred thousand or even a few million. But you haven't done the math, Bill Collier.
I've done the math. I'm thinking paywall models are going to be the future for the most part. But as far as the advertisers go, I think you're going to have agencies that connect to all these niche apps and these niche sites that serve ads to them. I think you'll have like this sort of partnership, like you sort of do now with ad platforms that. Like, I use a lot of ad platforms, not just Google, that connect to a lot of niche sites all over the multiverse. And I buy ads, and I know that they're going to be specialized ads for each of the niche audiences. It proves to be very effective and useful for me. So I don't think that niche... the bottom line is, no, we're not going to create another version of Facebook that is going to get 2 billion people.
Almost 3 billion people.
Right.
Okay, I am a little dubious as to whether these niche sites are going to work for social media because
I know you probably didn't think that the phone was going to take off either. So
or Facebook, and I'm not sure that either one of them really has.
Well, I would not. We got a caller here.
Caller is Carl from Providence, Rhode Island. Or Carrie, sorry. Is it Carrie or Carl? I can't see her. Carrie.
Hello, Carrie from Providence, Rhode Island.
Hi.
And by the way, congratulations, Carrie from Providence, Rhode Island. I just understand that Providence, Rhode Island changed its official name. I mean, Rhode Island changed its official name from Rhode Island and some kind of plantation or other, right? Straight up Rhode Island.
That's right. Yeah, we want to let go of that, that murky past. Well, it's not that murky. Everybody knows about it, but you know what I mean. We want to let go of that. So yeah, we're very happy about that. It was a hard win, but So I've been, you know, I didn't know what parlor was. I really thought it was it meant parlay, but you know, and I looked it up and I realized that it was sort of a microblogging. I mean, you know, very. I don't know. I just want to know, like, what's up with that, and is there a future in it? Because when, you know, it's divided, when all these sites are divided, like, how much noise or soundbite can they create, right? It's all, I mean, there are people going everywhere at this point. So what's your thought on that?
You want to try first, Ralph?
Yeah, and that is, there is a cool thing, Kari from Rhode Island, called Zipf's Law, Z-I-P-F. It was named after a linguist who calculated the frequency in which letters appeared in writing. So it turned out that the letter E was vastly more dominant than the next letter, which was more dominant than the next letter, and so forth and so on. The point, though, is that Zipf's law was then extrapolated to say, in any sector, you're going to have one super dominant company or super dominant plant or super dominant, whatever you're measuring. There's going to be one that is essentially going to be the big kahuna. And then there will be a series of littler kahunas. And so according to this law of nature, sometimes called Zipf's law, and sometimes called the law of power distribution, that we can be sure that Twitter, as long as it reigns supreme in the micro blogging sector, is going to be is going to have most of the people, most of the members, most of the traffic, hundreds of millions of people compared to Parler's millions of people. So I hear your concern and I respect your concern about the potential balkanization of social media. That would be an unprecedented phenomena. Things will end up with Twitter being the big kahuna, and then there will be these littler ones that people who are people like Bill, who are borderline paranoid schizophrenics, who do not trust.
This is not true in any way, shape, or form. But go ahead, Ralph.
And who do not understand software very well, can go to places like Parler to escape to enter into a parallel reality. Now, Bill.
Yeah, I think that that's a little harsh. I just think that people want to go to a place that they feel more comfortable, and that's just natural, normal. I don't see a big deal. You know, more power to Parler. Parler may get a few million people. It may become economically viable or not, and I don't know. I think there's room for all kinds of different little niche things like that. Parler is trying to be not niche, though. They're trying to be a big, broad thing, and they are trying to compete with Twitter, which I don't think is going to work in any time soon. I think the whole open free speech model, I've experimented over the years with communities, and one of the things that I have found is that for the most part, most people, most of the time, don't really want a free-for-all free speech zone. They sort of want free speech within a modicum of decorum, but they definitely have a range of taste that they don't want to be confronted with or deal with on their platform. I mean, I've learned that people
by being put into Facebook jail by violating the boundaries.
No, it has nothing to do with that, Banco. Oh. I'm talking about actually managing communities. You are fired. The point is that people do like communities that are pretty well policed. That's the bottom line. Yeah, and the fact, and yeah, you know what? So I got put in Facebook jail. It's not the end of the world. It didn't kill me.
You broke out of Facebook jail. Well,
and
they haven't sent you back yet.
Does not kill me makes me stronger.
Okay, so, Cardi, I'm not sure we answered.
I think you guys got a little bit of both, but I appreciate it. You know, I just wanted to know your thoughts on that because it's increasingly getting fractionalized, you know, and where is this heading? Like, we're supposed to be, I mean, you know, it needs to be less confusing, not more. That's all. But thank you for your thoughts, though. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah. Fractionalization is definitely going to happen. I mean,
mm-hmm. Fractionalization is definitely not going to happen. So,
what'd you say, John? Ralph?
Fractionalization is definitely not going to happen.
It's going to happen.
But dream on.
I'm not dreaming. Okay. I'm just telling. I'm predicting.
Okay.
Well,
all right.
Predict away. Anyway, thank you, Kari. Let's feel free to call us back so you can set Bill Collier straight next week. But let's make room for another caller.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Just remember, everyone out there in Radio Land, if Ralph always agreed with me, he'd never be wrong.
Not to mention, and the rest of us in Internet Land who recognize my intellectual and moral superiority, and they can demonstrate their reverence for me by going to Wavefarm WGXC and becoming sustaining members.
Thank you, guys. Good evening. Bye bye.
Thank you. Okay, well, we're here at WGXC Tech Talk, 518-697-7400, 518-622-2598. What other scintillating questions?
By the way, that clapping was for me. It wasn't for you, Banker.
I recognize the tenor of your clap. You were the one.
No, I would never clap for you. The only way I would.
It would be very vain and narcissistic of you to clap for yourself. So one must
infer. I didn't clap at all.
You were clapping for me.
You're going to be all right. Oh. Hello. All right, Banco, let's move on. So what other tech news do you have? Because, you know, you're supposed to be in charge of that.
Yeah, well, I think I already mentioned it was the end of the Arecibo radio telescope in Puerto Rico. It was obsolete. It was over 50 years old. They knew that it was coming apart. There was really nothing they could afford to do about it, and particularly because telescopes have moved to things like the Hubble and things like the other orbital telescopes. But I did hear that the Japanese sent a probe out to an asteroid and brought back an ounce or so of asteroid dust. Bill, what do you know about that?
I did not hear about this. Please do tell me more. Wow.
Well, there have been two probes sent to the to various asteroids. Now, I have written a number of times in blogs. People sometimes argue that the gold standard can't work because there are a bunch of asteroids that are suffused with gold, and once people start asteroid mining, it will just make gold about as valuable as copper or iron.
Yeah, this is something I've thought of.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it is. But the fact is that the cost of sending something to an asteroid and then bringing back an appreciable amount of ore is vastly, extravagantly more than the actual value of the ore, even if you brought back enough to didn't bring back enough to affect the supply and thereby reduce the price.
We have a call from Betsy, who probably cares immensely about this subject.
So you can now rest easy. You can sleep again at night, Bill Collier. Hello, Betsy.
Good evening.
Good evening to you.
Well, since I see you gentlemen are going pretty far afield tonight to go as far as asteroids and everything, I'd like to ask you a question about the realm of fiction.
Okay. Are we talking about Barsoom again? Assuming you were the Barsoomian.
We're talking about your love life, Ralph, if we're talking about fiction.
We're not going there.
Well, I remember a Betsy who called in to tell us about Barsoom,
which was the old Edgar Rice Burroughs story about Mars. And so if that's the fiction you're talking about, that would be very appropriate for this phone call.
Well, I'm updating my reading list a little bit, and I have been working on Ready Player One. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's a young people's book, but there's no age limits on who can read what these days. But it posits a world where everybody goes to school online and has avatars, and the world is a kind of a giant video game. And this is not new to the practitioners of fiction. There was Snow Crash and probably any number of other books that have been extremely popular that talk about Reamed by the same author, Neal Stephenson, that talk about online worlds. But it struck me, having a friend of mine who is a high school principal here and who is dealing with a school year that is occurring increasingly online, that, you know, this may be life imitating fiction again. And I kind of wonder what you gentlemen think about the whole online world of life, and particularly learning.
Very good question. Go ahead, Manco.
Very good question. Go ahead, Collier.
Fun. Well, I'm interested to see, and I don't know what the answer to this question is, but I'm interested to see whether the way we learn pedagogy will change significantly because of the internet. Will it change how people actually learn? Will actually people's brains begin to change from generation to generation and take in information differently than we did when we were kids? And how long will it take for the education establishment to stop teaching 20th century teaching methods to 22nd century brains, per se? So I think that the virtual element of how people can learn online, how they may be an immersive, like 3D environment. Imagine a 3D environment. The whole class can go and stand in the Colosseum and you know, watch the Christians get slaughtered by the pagans or whatever activity is going on. How that will change learning and how much more rapidly people will intake knowledge and absorb it, because the brain has immense capacity to learn. Will this increase our learning, or will we just, you know, basically keep doing cat videos?
Well, that's a good question. And speaking of cats, my money's on the Lions in the Colosseum.
Yeah, that's a kind of cat video, Bill. Come on.
It is, and I would actually pay to see you get thrown to the Lions, Mr. Banco.
I'm not a Christian, though, so I don't qualify.
I will make an exception in your case.
Well, thank you. Betsy, just in order to put a little wisdom in here as opposed to the folly to which you've just been exposed.
You mean my awesome awesomeness.
I've been doing online learning for many years now. And I think that a lot of people do online learning in an informal but very powerful way by going to YouTube to say, how do I do this or how do I do that? So it's not structured as formally as the online learning that you would get from, say, University of Phoenix or one of those other online universities where you can actually get an accredited degree. Or now that when they are shifting to grammar school, middle school, and high school, I believe that online learning can be very effective, but it has two major deficiencies or two major handicaps that we are going to have to figure out how to deal with if it is going to become the prevailing norm as opposed to in-person learning. The first one is childcare. Most parents are working. Both mommy and daddy have jobs, and when their kids, you know, and they're counting on their kids going off to school, plus having some kind of after-school daycare available, in order to let them pursue their careers, which is both an economic necessity and a cultural norm. So the first hurdle to overcome, if this is going to become a standard part of the culture, is what it, at least when it comes to grammar school and middle school and early high school children, is how do we make sure that the kids are supervised in a way that allows the parents to get to work. Right now, there's no good answer to that. And that is not a pedagogical problem. It's a sociological problem. But it's a real issue, and society has not gotten around to that. The second and probably even more important factor here is that a lot goes on from going to school beyond book learning. And that has to do with the socialization of the kids, which happens, by the way, according to many, many studies, the kids learn more from each other than they do from the teachers. So in terms of the socialization of the kids, and when you move this beyond public education and private education for grammar school, middle school, and high school, but then you move to collegiate education, you know, a lot of what goes on in college is the development of networks, of friendships that will actually last people both socially, but even more important than that, professionally, for a lifetime. Sometimes it's referred to as the old boy network or the old girl network. And these relationships that you develop while you're in college can be used to advance yourself professionally and enrich your life for, you know, years and decades thereafter. I'm not sure that can be done readily or as profoundly in online learning as it can be done from in-person learning. So until these two deficiencies are addressed and overcome, if they can be overcome, I think that there is going to be a strong drive to return people to in-person learning as soon as it becomes clinically safe to do that.
Well, those are two excellent points. I think to respond to the first one first, it would seem to me that education or childcare masquerading as education, I think, would be the more honest way to put it. That is a real problem. Middle class and upper middle class parents may more frequently have the work at home option that kind of helps cancel out some of the difficulties associated with unsupervised children in the home.
Time out. Niece is, or my best girl's niece is a work at home mom, and she has a young child, I think about a 2-year-old, and she says that having to be the primary caregiver of her 2-year-old, it makes it absolutely prohibitive for her and her husband, who's also a work at home guy, at least during the pandemic, is prohibitive to provide for them to be doing the active childcare and doing their job. So when you say more people are working from home and this should vitiate the problem, I have at least some credible reports that it intensifies the problem rather than vitiates it. So sorry.
Well, no, but it does work for some people, and there's other examples of that. But you're right. It is a challenge. But it's one that we're learning to rethink and deal with. The socialization thing, I think, is interesting. Certainly, I know that my misspent youth, I learned a lot more in college and even graduate school from my colleagues than I did, or my classmates than I did from my professors in the classroom. But I'm astounded to the degree to which the youngsters are socializing online now. I mean, I talked to a youthful friend not long ago, and he's got a group that plays mahjong every Thursday night, and he's got other groups that he's regularly in at least video contact with. It's not the same as hanging out at a bar and shooting pool, but it does seem to cover some of those bases, and you know, it's maybe not any much more different from the old church social and so forth that was the prevailing norm for socialization a century ago.
Yeah, you're not wrong, and Bill Bitt made a very profoundly important point when he talked about when we move into virtual reality and headsets and immersive experience. So it really looks like, I don't know if I can use the word feels like, but it really seems like you are in the room with the people you're socializing with. Then I think that's going to, I think that is going to create some profound changes on the way our social lives are organized. Except for when you are, you know, actually pursuing, say, romantic interactions. If you
that's going to be more of a challenge, although they do seem to have figured out ways to manage that for online experiences as well.
Well, tell me more.
No.
Darn it. I guess the
FCC... I will say this, as far as I'm an early bloomer as far as the internet goes, and I mean, I was on it right from the start, at least pretty early on. All of my closest business associates that I make the most money working with, and most of my closest friends, like the vast majority, every single one of them I met with and interact with online, and some who I consider very close. I never even saw them in person, but yet I'm very close to them.
Oh, you're talking about these Nigerian princes who are
I'm not talking about the Yahoo boys to send you millions of dollars,
right?
Just
Bill?
So everybody knows, most actual Nigerian princes who do actually exist, because I could actually wax eloquent on the culture of Nigeria and the kingdom.
Vastly expanded when you go online. And that's not insignificant.
No. I'll give you an example. I have a friend in Nigeria who actually sent me money when I was going through a hard time. I didn't. So my Nigerian prince actually sent me money because I was going through a hard time. He's actually really big with cryptocurrency and stuff. But at any rate, what the internet has done for me is, of course, I get to meet a lot of interesting people that like the things I like. Believe me, the niche for people that like helmets and 19th century European history and culture is pretty narrow. It's pretty narrow. But I know a lot of people that are of the same ilk or equally insane. And we all have collections and everything, and we compare, and you know, so.
Well, Bill, I've got to introduce you.
How much do you have? You know, that's a common conversation.
I'll have to introduce you to my friend Terry, who's an artist living in Lexington, Georgia. He's got a really big helmet collection.
Oh, you
need to introduce him to Bill and Bill to him.
Just send me his address, and if his helmets disappear. I had nothing to do with it.
Okay.
Thank you, Betsy from Barsoom. Thank you for calling in. We hope to hear from you again in future tech talks.
Iterations.
Thank you very much.
518-622-2598. Who else is out there? The truth is out there.
I met you through the internet.
What a scary thought.
No, you think about it. I mean, we did. And we have in all sincerity, as much as you'd like to bust my chops because...
They're so bustable.
No. But we have a fairly tight relationship over the years.
We've
we're pretty involved and engaged, and we don't see each other very often physically.
No, you're.
Even though you are going to be coming to my housewarming party in January, so.
Yes.
All the way up to.
Absolutely, by Zoom.
No, you have to physically come to this one.
Oh darn! I just am not going to be in Pennsylvania.
No, you're going to be in Bloswitz. Come on.
Got it.
You got to come.
Well, check in with me before you schedule the party because I'm scheduled to be.
I'm going to schedule it in February for all I know, but it's going to come when I can get all the stars aligned. Decker's coming. A lot of people are coming. Even Dustin Siggins is coming.
Really? It sounds like a potential super spreader event to me.
Well, I'm hoping that's one of the reasons why it's a little iffy because I want to see if things calm down. Obviously, I'm not going to schedule it while we're in the height of Corona season.
Yeah, except for the Corona beer.
Ah, those poor guys.
Yeah.
Rona! so, of course, we don't want to use the word Corona. Let's just say Rona. Think about it, Benko. How many people do you know that you're connected to that... Now, this is interesting. You're slightly older than me. By slightly, I mean, like, he's really old, guys.
Yeah, I know.
Your circle of friends, how many are internet related other than me and maybe Rachel?
None.
Really?
I don't know.
Think about it.
Depends upon how you define related, but we have another caller.
Tom from Durham.
Hello.
I've been to Durham. I'll tell you a story.
Well, why don't we let our caller ask?
Well, we'll let Tom on, and then maybe he'll want me to tell a story about Durham.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe he
I'm calling from Durham, New York.
I was going the opposite direction.
Where is Durham, New York?
Durham, New York is just north of Cairo, where you guys are right now.
All right. Bring it on, Durham.
Yeah, in any case, I'll tell you a little story, and then I'll let you guys comment. The guy was online, and while he's online, he calls his wife, or she calls him, whatever it is, and they start talking about how they finally have enough money to go on a vacation. And they talk about it, and he hangs up. He says, but in 30 seconds, no. When I went back to the freaking computer, a pop-up comes up. Have you ever thought of going to the Bahamas? It is a beautiful one, etc. All right. Now, is that just scraping the surface of what's going on? I mean, how intense is the surveillance of us in general? Cell phones and online... And I'll leave it to you guys. I don't even need to stay on the line if you don't want to.
Okay, well, thank you for ringing off. We'll answer your question, and that will give other people an opportunity to call in, Tom from Durham. The fact of the matter is everything and nothing that we do online is being surveilled by the government of the United States. The fact is that there are literally billions of messages sent every day, whether it's emails or texts or online postings or whatever. And I have it on pretty good authority, like Wired Magazine or somebody much smarter than Bill Collier, that this is all being monitored and archived in some massive server farms in Utah on behalf of the national security authorities. That said, they are not interested at all in our usual everyday chit chat. They are only interested in things that represent threats to the security of America's people and of America. They have algorithms that filter through these billions and billions and billions of messages and are prepared to signal when something comes up that sounds suspicious. If it sounds suspicious, they'll take a closer look. And if it still looks suspicious as in the sense of a potential sounds like it might be the planning of a terrorist attack on an American or American facility or American city, either domestically or one of our international facilities. Then they will put analysts on, actual real human beings, who begin to investigate and put together the pieces and find out if a real threat is being implied, or there's just somebody being a wise guy, somebody like, oh, say, Bill Collier. And it is a teensy minor fraction out to, you know, 6 or 8 points to the right of the decimal point of anything that they even look into, much less anything that they pay attention to. So on the one hand, I am convinced that everything that we do online is being recorded, but very little of what we do online, I mean, a ridiculously tiny amount of what's done online is of any interest whatsoever to the authorities, who are only out there trying to protect us. And so I think that Tom of Durham, you're right, but it's not really significant. And assuming that you are a reasonably law-abiding person, or at least not a terrorist, then you've got nothing to worry about. Over to you, Bill. You actually served in the Navy as a Russian submarine hunter during the Cold War, so you might actually have a knowledgeable opinion about this.
So we actually did listen to the Russian submarines, but I think what you're dealing with, though, Tom, in that particular scenario, is there are tools that, when they say they listen, it's a different thing. Like, if I'm listening to you, I can hear everything you say. Whereas opposed to a piece of software that listens and listens for just keywords, it's like text to speech. It doesn't save the text. It just saves the keywords and says, this keyword was used, serve an ad. I find that to be a little creepy, but albeit harmless, but still creepy.
Well, I find it to be reassuring that we have heroic operatives who are out there protecting us by listening.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the private company that's using the information to serve ads. I find that creepy.
Oh, that's not creepy. All they're trying to do is please you, Bill. They want to sell you helmets and model ships and other things that just are delight to your heart's desire. They don't want to sell you snow. They don't want to try to sell you snowshoes because they know that you are an indolent SOB who will never actually go snowshoeing. So give them a break.
I would look good in snowshoes.
You know, we'll leave that to Shekel to decide.
You would look good dressed up as Frosty the Snowman, Banco. I really think that you should get in. You should completely immerse yourself in the character.
I'm not sure that's a Yiddish kite kind of thing.
Yeah, no, it would be really awesome for you to with the snow.
Isn't Frosty like a Christian saint or something like that?
No, you just stand straight and we'll just surround you with the costume.
I see.
In very cold weather. And we'll just leave you out overnight.
Tom of Durham, have we answered your question?
Farouk from North Carolina is calling in, and he probably knows a few things about Durham.
Yeah, Durham. He might be the very bull Durham.
He may be.
Let's let him talk. Farouk.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call, y'all. How are you?
Wasn't there a king? Wasn't there a president or a king Farouk of Saudi Arabia?
There was, except it was Egypt.
Wrong country, Banco. What country were they the king of?
Egypt.
They
were the king of Egypt. Yeah, I said Egypt or Saudi Arabia or something like that. I just didn't realize that Egypt still had a king.
And Farouk, do you remember who deposed the king?
You know, I don't. I'm not Egyptian. My knowledge on Egypt's history isn't the best. I remember the story because it's been told to me. But it's been a long time. Can you refresh my memory?
So, King Farouk of Egypt. I'm actually looking at
Gamal Abdel Nasser, right?
No, it was before Nasser.
Okay.
Yeah, it was actually before Nasser. And let's see here. I'm looking it up because it's actually a very curious thing.
Yeah, sure.
I just forgot the name of the guy. Come on, I know the name Egyptian president. There he goes.
I know who it was.
Bill, let Farouk ask his question, please, while you're idling away on Google.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It was Nasser. I'm sorry. I said Nasser. Okay, fine.
How could you have doubted me, Bill?
Jamal Abdel Nasser.
I am so hurt. You doubted me. You, Admiral, we find your lack of faith disturbing.
Okay. Let us let Farouk talk.
Well, I have faith in what both you both say, so that's why I'm calling. I actually wanted to talk to you guys and get your feedback on something that is sort of emerging, I think, real time. So you both have familiarity with augmented reality and technology that sort of promotes virtual support or assistance. And, you know, we've talked actually about Alexa before in one of my earlier calls. My question is this. This was brought up by a friend who's in the teaching community, and there seems to be some articles and newsworthy information coming through that some of the school systems are interested in beginning to use augmented reality as a support mechanism for their curriculum. So you would have a virtual teaching assistant. So, you know, in a very high level, obviously, I wanted to see if you had some insight as to whether augmented reality and the virtual assistants and that sort of thing has a place in the school systems. And then, of course, I'm kind of curious to see if it's plausible that at some point in the future, schools will be taught by virtual teachers, especially as we're seeing so many teaching unions and teachers themselves not, you know, interested, or at least they're cautious about returning back to school. And so do we see the potential of the future with school systems that are educated by virtual teachers? And I wanted to get your feedback on that.
Very interesting question, Farouk. I don't think we're at the point of having virtual teachers yet, yeah, or augmented teachers. I think that there may be aspects of teaching that will be augmented by little bots and non-player character type things that are like in simulations, like going back to like a history, like a guide that might walk them through the city of Rome. I think you're going to have more AI augmentation of the evaluation process of students so that they make it quicker and easier, maybe even AI augmenting testing and scoring, and then the teacher has to go back through manually to make sure everything is right, but it'll just make it easier for them. But I don't see AI teachers being a thing anytime within the next 20 or 30 years. Go ahead, Banker.
Well, look, there's a... We're blurring two categories here, AI and AR, artificial intelligence and augmented reality.
Right.
These are two very, very different things. So let's start with the AIs, and then we'll go to the ARs.
He was specifically asking about artificial intelligence within an augmented reality, teaching students as an artificial intelligent teachers.
Right, and I'm just saying...
That's what I'm specifically addressing.
It's confusing to blend the two. Let's just separate it.
But they will be blended.
Bill, you're so easily confused that I'm trying to prevent that. So, look, right now, the art of artificial intelligence is extremely primitive. And all of the AI entities that have been invented to date, which are, you know, just fancy software programs, are not remotely smart enough to become perceptive and directive enough to become a teacher. Now, will that change? I don't know. Google just announced that it achieved supremacy in quantum computing, and people are putting quantum computing to doing protein folding in a way that is many times faster than digital computing. And China just announced this week that they've come up with a quantum computing mechanism that is something like, I don't know, 100 million times better than Google's. So our, if we are on the cusp of a major breakthrough in quantum computing that will allow computers to become vastly more intelligent artificially than they currently are, vastly more agile and sophisticated when it comes to either thinking or at least looking like they're thinking outside of something artificial like beating chess or Go Masters, then this could go completely out the window and we could actually have this master AI intelligence coming forward in what is called the singularity much faster than we would project based upon how long it's taken to get here. So far, unless there's a discontinuous leap forward, Farouk, we are not going to have an AI that's capable of being an effective teacher for the foreseeable future. Bill has just proven the old adage that even a blind squirrel finds an acorn sometimes. When it comes to augmented reality means you essentially put on a pair of glasses and in addition to seeing what's actually out there, it can manifest images into your range of sight. So you could see, oh, say, Harvey the Invisible White Rabbit, although I don't know how you see Invisible White Rabbit, hopping around in the real landscape. That is a very cool technology. They're making progress with it. It's still in a very primitive stage, but these things can move together very quickly. And I suspect that we are going to be seeing some very cool applications of augmented reality probably within my lifetime, meaning within the next 10 or 15 years. AI, I think, is a more sophisticated problem, and it's going to take, like Bill said, 30 years or so. So I'm not sure that that answers your question, Farouk. That's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
Yeah, no, it does. It does. I mean, the timeline is really, I guess, what it is. I think that there's a basis to my theory that it is plausible at some point down the line that this is possible, but what I didn't realize is that we might be to be able to combine the various technologies into a functioning, full-fledged, curriculum taught by these virtual teachers is many years down the road. But so that does answer my question. I'm going to relay that back to my friend, so she's not worried about losing her job anytime soon.
Yeah, that probably isn't going to happen.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, gentlemen.
Now, Bill, do we have time for another caller if there's one out there?
We have less than 2.5 minutes, so no.
Unless it's a really quick call.
If anybody's got a really, really simple question, simple enough even for a collier to answer, then bring it on. But
out there who sympathize with me having to put up with Ralph, just understand that Ralph actually has living children. And I'm sure they covet and appreciate your prayers and good vibes being sent their way, having to deal with this hot mess of a man every so often. So
my four beautiful grown children are just extraordinarily lucky to have had such a wonderful father such as myself, and to have a father as wonderful as I am, and as modest.
Benko, if you're not my augmented reality AI, if you're real, I'm beginning to wonder. I know I've seen you in person many times actually, but every time I see you, you look more and more robotic. I think they need a new model.
Well, since you haven't seen me in years, then I think you're fantastic.
No, it hasn't been years. Last I saw you was what, a year and a half ago or something?
Okay. Months.
Yeah.
Pre-pandemic.
Yes, I definitely saw you pre-pandemic, and it was, as always, lovely.
Of course it was. So, WGXC listeners, thank you very much.
We have a minute to go, and
friends,
next week we will have more TikTok updates.
Yeah, you're obsessed with TikTok, I guess, which is probably why we named the show Tech Talk.
I am an homage to TikTok. Be a TikTok star. I should do anime. I should do anime videos on TikTok.
Wait a minute, I thought you were anime. You mean you're an actual living human being?
Yes.
Oh, well, that explains a lot.
Yes. who has an alabaster, a pure alabaster cup that you do not have. So you should be jealous.
Yes, from looted from one of those alabaster cities that that gleam undimmed by human tears.
And I actually filled mine up with human tears just to...
Well, the tears of liberals, right.
Well, and conservatives, they're all crying. We are